Welcome to Business Line Podcasts and yet another episode of People at Work, hosted by Kamal Karant, co-founder of specialist staffing firm Xfino. This time round, Kamal explores the issue of toxicity and abuse at work, as well as the stress caused by high-pressure jobs. These issues have surfaced because of two recent tragic incidents. A 25-year-old executive with a consulting firm who took his life allegedly due to work pressures, and the sudden death of a senior journalist who reportedly faced harassment at work. Joining Kamal as a guest on the show is Aparna Jain, a leadership coach who's building Prez, a forum to enable more women to enter senior workplaces. Over to them.
Hi, Aparna. I welcome you to a monthly podcast on themes that matter at work.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Theme this podcast around the stress caused by workplace abuse. And before I pen the questions, I went back in time for almost two decades of my career and asked if I ever been abusive myself or people have been abusive to me or I've seen things around the workplace that I've been around. And I found shades of them, but it was fuzzy, you know, for me. And just to give you a context, I also was reading up a little and I read this interesting piece from this Austrian-born endocrinologist and the author of the book, The Stress of Life, a gentleman called Hans Seyl. And he terms eustress, or what he calls as good stress. He argued that there may be some common benefits accrued due to eustress until it reaches a certain level when it becomes distress. Now, the question to you, Aparna, is have you encountered or experienced workplace abuse or bullying directly or indirectly? If not, can you share your experiences on workplace toxicity from your ecosystem and how you have been processing them over the years?
Sure. So Kamal, quite honestly, of course, I've experienced workplace toxicity. In fact, in my very first job in the country, you know, I used to work in the hotel industry and it was my first job. And I think for women, you have to look at toxicity through a different lens. You have to look at the gender lens a lot, right? You know, the hotel industry is full of people. This was my first job and it was, you know, you do work late in the night, etc. And, you know, you don't have any issues around it. But I'm a single woman and I was driving myself and all that. And I remember, you know, there was a person in the kitchen who was constantly drunk and had been for many years. But the union in the hotel was so strong that nobody could remove him. Now, I didn't know the backdrop of all this. But I do know that one day when I was leaving the hotel at about 1 a.m, he was in the time office at that point of time and he came and he grabbed hold of my hand and he said something like, "Madam, aaj aap toh humare saath aayenge," which is basically like, "You're going to come home with me tonight." Something you know, it was an open kind of harassment. And I was a little worried and, you know, luckily somebody came at that time and then, you know, he backed off and he was absolutely drunk. So the next morning, in all my youth and all my, fight for justice, I walked into the executive chef's office and I told him what happened. And he just gave me this really strong look and he said that, "Would you be willing to put this in writing?" And I said, "Of course I would." And, you know, he handed me a piece of paper and I started to write the entire complaint with the sequence of events. And he got up and he left the office. And then, you know, eventually he came back and, you know, I handed him the complaint. It went to HR and they had just been looking for a reason to fire this person and they had not had a complaint. And I didn't know the complexities of this entire system. I was fairly naive. Nobody really guided me. Nobody from HR came. And you wouldn't believe it. Using this complaint, they fired him, but the union was on my case. One day I left work and my car was missing. And eventually we figured that they had picked up my car, which was a small Maruti 800 at the time, and they had moved it to a completely different area, which was like in a darker sheltered area. People used to follow me home late in the night. It had become quite toxic. But the worst part of it was that nobody in senior management had really stepped up to protect me or help me. So the day my stint with them got over, I quit the company. So that I have to say is when I was really young, After that, many years later, I moved to Delhi. I had a very toxic boss who was constantly screaming. She was a perpetual screamer. And again, you don't, I think there is some part of an upbringing that many people have, which is very much like focus on the work and do the work, and maybe you're doing something wrong. And I didn't realize that it was her personal ambition. She wanted to get ahead. She wanted to be seen. And she was just, I literally, she was a screamer. And as a consequence of that, even the team I was handling, I had become so tough with them. And one day, maybe after about 6 months, I just couldn't recognize myself. I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, oh my God, who have I become? I've become this horrible version of myself, because I've become her in a way. I think the next day I walked into her office and I yelled back at her and then I quit. But it really took me, I had really become a toxic person because of my toxic boss. So those are my experiences.
Aparna, your story gives me shivers, and I can pretty much imagine that must have been a pre-Porsche era. And
Pre-posh, very pre-posh, yes.
yeah, so I can imagine that, and your story really gives me shivers about what can happen in today's world. And just recently, somebody asked me for a counsel on what do I do with a boss who's constantly shouting at me in front of my subordinates. And I sort of gave him a similar advice, saying, take him in a room and shout at him, right?
No, I don't know if that's a solution, though. I think it was
Yeah,
just a consequence of
I feel
me.
guilty. I must have yelled at some of the people who worked at me in the past. But some of the industries, they say, Aparna, like whether it is the industries, roles, pressure is inevitable. And as there is competition, deadlines, which is difficult to ignore, I know I can possibly name them, but it could be beyond these industries, whether it is media, consulting, banking in some cases, or it could be a certain set of companies, or sometimes they say it's context, breaking news, month ends, quarter ends, year ends. And I'm yet to understand the difference between pressure and stress, but I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to ask. Would you agree that this role, industry context, creates stress?
Actually, I don't think there's any industry where there are no targets or there's no demand to operate at a high level of productivity, to be honest, I was looking at some statistics and they said that IT, banking, finance are the top three sectors that account for almost 48% of employment today. They're all target-based, okay? My local branch, I had gone to my local branch and they had three people resign who I used to deal with because they said they're not doing banking anymore and they're only selling insurance and schemes. Do you remember that famous video that went viral where somebody from a very big bank was yelling at their team for not hitting the targets of selling. And all this is pressure from the top, right? You know that in your banks, at the end of the year, because they've not met their targets, you'll get a call from the bank manager saying, hey, can you deposit some money? Because I'm running short on my targets and it would really help me if you could deposit some money, So there are targets for everybody. I mean, I think today even an NGO has targets. They're busy raising funds. I heard a podcast, which is perhaps a little bit old, but I'm pretty sure there's some kind of analogy even now, where there was a bunch of teachers in an elementary school system in USA that got busted because unless their students met a required mark, they were not going to get funded anymore. So they would get the entire papers into a room and they would, change the answers on these students' papers. And this is an elementary school, okay? Just so that they could get, funded to stay in business. Hospitals have targets, doctors like send us for tests. Startups have targets. Designers have to compete against AI now. So I don't think there's any industry that doesn't have targets, all right? It's how you handle it. What is the relationship between people? What does the leadership look like? How is the value system? And is it even realistic or is it unrealistic? I mean, I was reading or I was hearing rather a podcast where somebody from NASSCOM was saying that, they've only hired 60,000 new people this year versus like a 2.5 lakh people in the earlier year. And that just shows that people have perhaps not planned things well. People are not hiring right. People have just not done their homework. So I think there's no one sector which has a more, I would say, explicit kind of workplace which is toxic. I think targets are everywhere, pressure is everywhere, stress is everywhere. I don't think in today's world it's not there at all.
Absolutely, Aparna. I run a recruitment company and I have 310 recruiters, and I think everybody will watch for, month-end pressures that we put them on, right? So, but my measure of toxicity, if I had to focus on that a little more, comes from gauging how meetings are conveyed by bosses, or run. The participation, the volume, listening, sort of hints at how the leaders treat their team. And in this chain, when the boss is under a pressure already from their bosses, how do we separate the role holder from the role and empathize with their context as well?
Look, I think there is a style issue. So I think there are four types of bosses, okay? There is somebody I call a feudal boss, and that's the kind of boss who wants productivity at all costs. It's very much the mindset that you are my lackey and I am doing you a favor by hiring you. And in those companies, I feel truly this department known as HR, which I have a huge issue with when it's called human resources, they really are managing people as human resources, all right? There is no warmth, there is no human element, there is no worry for the people. And that is one kind of boss, which is the feudal boss. You then, so I don't think I have any sympathy or empathy with them. I think it's an issue. Then there are the political bosses. They are, I would say, fairly incompetent. They tend to micromanage because they can't look at the big picture. They need sycophants and they need people to report into them. They create an environment of politicizing in the company, all right? Again, those are the kinds of people I feel I have no sympathy with. Then you have the plain big bully bosses who are like power hungry and they've probably never been in a managerial position ever. And all their inner demons really come out, whether it's in sexism or casteism or classism or ageism or any kind of harassment, right? But then the only kind of bosses I would probably have some empathy for, and I think it's again to do with culture and language and communication, is the tough love bosses. They really have very high standards for themselves. They want the best from you. They're tough. They're pretty ruthless in the sense they don't want to waste any time. They believe in you being competent. So when you don't perform, they are disappointed, you know? And sometimes they also are under so much pressure that they can lose it, but they apologize, right? So a lot of people may consider them brusque or like, there's a style mismatch or they're not empathetic. But I think those are the only bosses perhaps I would give a little bit credit to because it's not toxic as much as it's a style issue. And you really cannot be somebody for everybody, especially when the targets are so high. So I would say that for me, those are the classifications.
I made a note of what you said, and as you wonderfully narrating, the different kinds of bosses, I noted it down as FPBT, the feudal, the political, the bully, the tough love. And as I was processing that, I also wanted to share an instance with you. We once called in a manager who was apparently shouted at and asked to leave a team meeting by his boss, who had a reputation for losing his temper frequently. The manager completely denied that such a thing had even happened, whereas two employees, on assuring anonymity, had reported the same incident the previous day. We were in a pickle. Should we trust the apparently abused manager or the employees who reported the incident? When we went back to those employees about the manager's denial, they explained, our own inaction in the past, so-called management, and the leader's preceding track record. They said, this guy always delivered numbers, so we don't think that you could take action. And that day, I started to believe, when I was thinking about the manager who got abused but never wanted to admit, he's in the Stockholm syndrome, wherein, as you know, victims start sympathizing with their abusers and even feel that the sufferers deserve it. Why do you think in a world full of social media, scrutiny and so much of media to, sort of articulate, share the suffering, people still want to suffer on their own?
So I don't think it's Stockholm syndrome, really. I think it's just plain survival. The very fact that you said that they didn't have faith in the system that they could make a complaint, or the person was a high performer, I think this is very much about just survival. I mean, you just look at the job market today, Kamal. Like, I mean, we don't have enough jobs in the market, all right? There is so much scarcity. Can you get a job easily? I go to fill my petrol from a nearby station. Every time the person who fills my gas says, "Ma'am, I'm a graduate, I don't have a job." Okay? Many people have education loans to pay. Lots of people are breaking the cycle of being the first graduate in the family, the first MBA. A lot of them have family pressures. Okay? For women, it's even worse. Okay? So, for example, many women are stepping out against the wishes of their family because there is a form of control that families try to, place on women. So they keep quiet about harassment. They keep quiet about bullying because the minute they talk about that, they'll be told, please stay at home and you don't need to go out. As it is, there is enough and more that they hear constantly. So it will stop them from being independent. And a lot of women just want that independence. So I would say it's not Stockholm syndrome. It is a scarcity issue. I don't think people really honestly sympathize with their manager and their pressures. I really don't think so.
Fair enough, Aparna, I was looking beyond the instances around us, and I was looking at internationally. Is there anything that countries, the so-called advanced countries, developed countries rather, do? And I was reading up that countries with workplace anti-bullying laws, like Sweden, Netherlands, Denmark, France, a few more, have single-digit rates of employees reporting workplace bullying than the countries who don't have these laws. For example, United States, I believe there's about 30% reported bullying in workplace. South Africa is higher, so is Canada. Russia has the maximum reported. So this range is about 30 to 60%, Russia being the top at 60% plus. So would a workplace abuse and toxicity check, I coined this acronym with one of my colleagues, so which is WATCH, watch. Something like that, like we came up with POSH, that legislation which really brought out a lot of awareness in many ways. Do you think a watch like legislation will help India, or do you think we are overreacting?
No, I don't think we're overreacting, but I think there needs to be a very clear idea as to what is toxic workplaces and who is responsible for it. So, for example, I think sexual harassment is very much part of a toxic workplace, okay? And the POSH Act is one of the strongest I've seen. Now, the thing is that we have a POSH Act that gets updated every year, but how is it implemented? I know so many people who do not use the POSH Act because they know that the person is going to get away. I am on POSH committees, and I had a call once from somebody who was a public listed company, and they said, "Can you be on an external member on our committee?" And they started to give me the whole case, and I was like, "You're not supposed to talk to me about it. You're not supposed to give me the case. I haven't even signed the contract." So I think people jump the gun, and therefore there is no faith in the system, right? Reportage mechanisms for so, and the other kind of bullying, for example, is casteist or classist, and there is a law, for example, in the SCST Act, which you're not allowed to call people names, which is using the caste of the person to humiliate them. But is it implemented? No, because people get away with it and nobody reports it. So you can have as many reportage systems as you want. You can have code of conducts, you can have a value system, you can have an ombudsperson, you can have committees and committees and committees. But if there is no faith that these systems work, and especially if they don't work at senior levels, then there is something wrong. So I don't think the answer is more committees. My major point, and I always say this, is that people do not talk about insidious toxicity. Okay, people hire for an MBA or this person comes from a great university, and oh my God, this person is going to be a great fit for this role. And then, because of whatever commercial reasons, etc., they start to downsize. When they start to downsize, they start putting pressure on the few good people to do more. Okay, this more becomes more. These people start doing administrative tasks which are not part of their jobs. Now they have no brain breaks. They have no time to do everything. People are not happy with remote work. All this stuff about mental health, I think people are not really supporting it enough. They make a pretense, so they will have a mental health app, or they will have a bunch of people, who you can go to and talk to. But really, what are you doing? I think that's a band-aid. What are the pressures at work like? What are the insane hours like? People are presuming that work at home makes it 24/7 access for people. No, it doesn't work like that. All right. For example, the BPO and that entire industry, they have night shifts. Statistics say that for your brain to really work effectively, firstly, you should be working according to the circadian system. Secondly, you should do a minimum of 3 weeks on one shift for the brain to acclimatize to that change in time. So many people are put on a 1 week night shift, 1 week day shift, 1 week afternoon shift. So there's a lot of insidious kind of toxicity in the workplace, which is inbuilt, which is what people should be looking at. That is where we need to really make the change.
Aparna, you sort of took away my sixth question in a way by,
Ooh, sorry.
but it was fabulous listening to you about the way you narrated things that organizations can do in a certain way and the contextualization of the same. But for all the candor you brought in today, I want to still ask, what else can organization do to keep a watch on workplace toxicity and abuse?
Look, I think, Amal, it stems from the leadership, right? Like you said this earlier, that how a person talks. I think language is a big one. I think the kind of way you are with your leadership team, what you expect from them, how you correct issues, how big of a stance are you willing to take against your most productive person who has brought you in the best business? If they go awry, are you willing to hold them up? Are you willing to fire them? All these things. I would say leadership is generally the first place I would look at. I've always had this thing that you can tell everybody how to behave in the workplace, but what do you go home and do? Are you a different person at home and are you a different person in the workplace? It's when the workplace can make a change on you as a person, then the workplace has succeeded. But if society has a larger role to play on you, then society has won. And society is not necessarily the most great place to be in. It's one of the most toxic environments in many ways. So people can talk about workplaces being toxic, but I think it's much more imperative to examine your own context, your own homes, your own societies, your own neighborhoods, and what you are actually doing.
Wonderful, Aparna, and I really enjoyed listening to you, and thank you for being so incisive and bringing your rich experiences and views for people at work. I look forward to reading and following your views, and for listeners who don't know Aparna, please go and read her book, Own It. And for now, Aparna, thank you once again, and it's a bye for now on behalf of Hindu Business Line. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.